वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंद गोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः ओम ज्ञानतिमिरंधस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामयं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं त्वं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजना सहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च नमाओं विष्णुपादाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामीनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे नमो महावदन्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्य नामने गौरत्विषे नमः हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांता राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
सर्वशास्त्राब्दि पीयूषा सर्ववेदैक सत्फल सर्वसिद्धांत रत्नाढ्य सर्वलोकैक दृक्प्रद सर्वभागवत प्राण श्रीमद्भागवतम प्रभो कलिध्वान्तोदितादित्य श्रीकृष्ण परिवर्तिता
रीडिंग फ्रॉम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 17 टेक्स्ट 11 वेदः प्रणव एवाग्रे धर्मोऽहं वृषरूपध्रे उपासते तपोनिष्ठा हंसं मा मुक्तकिल्बिषाः वेदः प्रणव एवाग्रे धर्मोऽहं वृषरूपध्रे उपासते तपोनिष्ठा हंसं मा मुक्तकिल्बिषाः वेदः प्रणव एवाग्रे धर्मोऽहं वृषरूपध्रे उपासते तपोनिष्ठा हंसं मा मुक्तकिल्बिषाः
तपोनिष्ठा
Matajis. Word to word meaning. Vedaha, the Veda. Pranavaha, the sacred syllable Om. Eva, indeed. Agre, in Satya Yuga. Dharmaha, the object of mental activities. Aham, I. Vrisharupa Drik, bearing the form of the bull of religion. Upasate, they worship. Tapah nishthah, fixed in austerity. Hamsam, Lord Hamsa. Mam, me. Mukta, freed from. Kilbishah, all sense. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In Satya Yuga, the undivided Veda is expressed by the syllable Om, and I am the only object of mental activities. I become manifest as the four-legged bull of religion, and thus the inhabitants of Satya Yuga, fixed in austerity and free from all sins, worship me as Lord Hamsa. Purport. The bull of religion is described in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.17.24, Tapah Shaucham Daya Satyam Iti Padha Krite Kritaha. In the age of Satya, truthfulness, your four legs were established by the four principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. Sri Vyasdev divided the one Veda into four, the Rig, Yajur, Sam, and Atharva Vedas, at the end of Dwapar Yuga. But in Satya Yuga, the whole of Vedic knowledge is easily understood by everyone, simply by vibrating the syllable Om. In this age, there are no ritualistic or pious activities such as sacrifice, since everyone is sinless, austere, and fully engaged in worshipping the personality of Godhead, Lord Hamsa, through the process of meditation. Hare Krishna. So thank you all for coming. So this chapter, Lord Krishna's, his discussions with Uddhav Ji is continuing. And is describing the Varnashram system. Uddhav Ji in the beginning of this chapter is asking that how everyone can come to the platform of loving service. And the Lord is now giving an elaboration of the Varnashram system. Before that, he mentions about the various ages and the principles of dharma which are upheld in different ages. What is the process of perfection? So, I'm going to make a humble attempt to discuss the purport, and based on the purport and the theme of this particular verse and what is going on. So, I'll speak basically three parts. I'll talk about this significance of expanding the Vedic scriptures from how did that happen from Om to so many books that we have, what was the purpose behind it, what do we learn from it. We'll also discuss about this particular verse, in what context it comes, that Parikshit Maharaj is encountering Kali, and the last section will be talking about the bull of religion, the four aspects, depending on how much time we go ahead. So, we understand that in Satya Yuga, only Om was sufficient to understand the conclusion of the scriptures. So, this is quite interesting because what Shastras are actually focusing is on the essence and not necessarily the details. And the details, when they are mentioned in the scriptures, their purpose is to actually convey the essence. Vyasdev, when he appeared in Dwapar Yuga towards the end, and he could foresee that people in Kali Yuga will be very much incapable of understanding the essence. And to make it easier for them, he thought of dividing the Vedic knowledge into multiple folds. So he divided one Veda into four, and all of us know that Upanishads, Puranas, Itihasas, everything came. Itihas is basically the story of one family or one prominent person. So he wrote Mahabharata, Valmiki Muni had already given Ramayana. And Puranas are selected stories from the history which convey a specific theme. So like the Bhagavad Puran is a Puran which collects the stories of the devotees and conveys the importance of pure devotional service through whatever stories they are explaining. So Vyasadeva is contemplating the reason why he expanded this knowledge is Vyasa Krapana Vatsala, it is said, because of his great compassion for the people of Kali Yuga who would be incapable of understanding this knowledge, he did the hard work of expanding this knowledge into various forms and shapes. So this is an interesting and important principle of how one has to do the needful when we are trying to outreach, when we are trying to do outreach and share this message with the people in the world today. So there is always this confusion that many of us have is how do we strike a balance between tradition and innovation? Tradition gives you substance and innovation gives you relevance. And when we are talking about making this message understandable for people in this day and age, both are essential. If we are only traditional, and if we just stick to tradition without caring for the relevance, then we might land up becoming islands with no bridges. That means you are happy in your own world, but then nobody wants to interact with you. You are just on your own. And if you try just to be relevant and appease people, then we may lose substance. Then we don't have something substantial to give people. So we have to fine-tune constantly. And we have to constantly innovate in order to remain relevant. Especially in the age and day and age when things are changing so fast, the need for becoming relevant is extremely critical. And few weeks back we were having a nice discussion in the Brahmachari class where some of the experts had come, and we were talking about how it is so important for constantly innovate in order to keep our message relevant. And that speaker was giving example of even in the contemporary world, when industries don't change with the need of the world, they cease to exist. And he was giving example of how, you know, he was giving example of a contemporary, very famous, taxi kind of taxi services that has been provided, which has totally removed all the normal way of commutation which used to happen earlier. And he was giving example of similarly for room occupancy, even the biggest hotels doesn't match the net worth of this kind of operation. So constant innovation is extremely critical. And the problem that comes is when people are just sticking to tradition, we get into this fix that we think that we have always done it that way. Humne hamesha se aise hi kiya hai. And therefore that one thing doesn't let us move into the areas where innovation can happen and we can make our message relevant. So Vyasadeva was an ideal personality because he was constantly thinking about the future, about how this message is going to remain relevant and useful for people as time progresses. So we have to keep ourselves in future to make changes today so that our message remains relevant and fresh even for the future. A preacher or a person who is carrying this message has to be a visionary who sees things down the line, sees the trends down the line, and makes adjustment here and now so that, you know, things remain fresh and acceptable. And it's like a relay race. He thinks of 50 years, 100 years down the line, and then people who come in that lineage have to constantly keep thinking about what is going to click in future for people to understand this message in a relevant manner. You know, it's like language. English is an old language.
But we see even within language, dialects keep changing. So now if you would hardly hear anybody talking in Shakespearean English. And even if you talk in Shakespearean English, very few people might be able to even understand what you're saying. Right? So the language is continuing, but the dialect keeps changing. Right? Similarly, the message keeps continuing, the system keeps continuing, but the way we administer and communicate has to constantly undergo reform, constantly undergo innovation. And people who are deep in tradition can only innovate without losing substance. Because innovation also comes at a flip side, because you might deviate totally from what the message originally was. So people who are deep in tradition and are mature because of the practice of the tradition, they are able to keep the essence and innovate the way it is being administered. Now, sometimes we want to change the way we communicate our message because of different reasons. Because we want to be popular, we want to be famous, we want to be known in the world. In fact, if you look at historical perspective of Vaishnavism or any kind of stream of either Gaudiya Vaishnavism, Sri Vaishnavism, anything, innovation was always inspired by compassion and not competition. The reason why Acharyas thought of innovating was because of compassion. Okay, people in future will not be able to practice such a system, so we need to innovate so that it becomes, you know, it becomes practicable for people. And they did not innovate on, you know, the what to give, but innovation was only on how to give. What to give, that message remains, you know, intact perennially. How to give that message was what innovated by different acharyas as per time, place and circumstance. So we should innovate to reach out and not just to rise up personally. So that's a very important. Otherwise, if the motivation is selfish, then in the name of innovation, we might actually deviate. But the purpose of, you know, innovation has to be especially that we keep the message relevant for people in this day and age. It's like if you have a great message but no one is willing to listen to it, then it practically loses its purpose. You may have the best of the medicine which can cure your disease, but if you don't have a syringe or an injection which, you know, interjects it intravenously, even if you bathe in that medicine, your disease is not going to get cured. That medicine has to reach the right place in the right proportion at the right time to actually cure the disease. So similarly, we have the perfect message. Now we all need is the right kind of, it's not that we don't have, we have it, but I'm saying you have to constantly innovating that syringe so that the message is being injected at the right place in the right environment. So we see that in the life of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they were innovators actually. If you look at their contemporary social systems and what they did in those social systems, it was pretty innovative. Like previously, once we were discussing about how Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas, and as a sannyasi, how he did so many things which were probably not so much popular or socially acceptable for the person in the renounced order, like staying in one place. Sannyasis were supposed to just keep traveling. So he stayed at one place, interacted with society, interacted with devotees. So he innovated. Just his concept of, this aspect of accepting sannyas itself was an innovation. Right? So that the message remains, you know, it can be reached out to maximum people. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur Prabhupada, you know, he was a saint of his time, and he did so many things to attract people to the fold of devotional service, which were quite innovative for the time that he was considering, like the diorama exhibitions that he would put, the elegant temples that he would build, the kind of conferences he would organize, his idea of sending his disciples to the other lands to share this message. It was quite innovative. And Srila Prabhupada was, you know, continued that same theme and same stream, and that ball is still rolling. So innovation is what actually keeps that, the message fresh. Just like a big reservoir of water, sometimes they have to put fountains in that water so that the water keeps getting recycled and it doesn't deteriorate. Similarly, we have the message of the Bhagavad Now we need different fountains in the form of realizations of different devotees which will keep this message fresh, attractive, lively and useful for people to come as time progresses. Because Uddhav ji in this chapter was actually mentioning to Krishna that you spoke this knowledge some time back and please reiterate it because it might lose its value. Over a period of time things tend to become stale. So we need that fresh gush of, you know, oxygen, a fresh gush of understanding to keep it relevant and acceptable. So our presentation of philosophy should generate appreciation in the hearts of people. And when we actually share this knowledge with people, once Gaurang Prabhu was mentioning that when you do outreach, you create two kind of followers. One is faithful followers. They are the people who pick up the devotional system, the devotional service, the exact, you know, systems of philosophy. And second is friendly followers. So friendly followers, they align themselves with you and gradually they start moving towards the path of devotional service. And he was saying that both are very critical. Both are extremely critical for the propagation of a, you know, philosophy for time to come. So in order for people to be able to accept, and you know, the fold of devotional service, we don't have to lower the standards, but we have to just make practice of bhakti easy for them to understand, creates facilities where they can practice them, and then create an experience for them around that practice which kind of leaves a strong impression in their mind that they want to come back. His Holiness Devamrita Swami Maharaj a couple of years back was talking about this particular theme in one of his ILS seminars in Mayapur, that he spoke about these three things, that we have to make bhakti easy for people, create facilities where they can practice it, and then give them an experience, a natural experience where that impression is very strong. So this is I thought of sharing because Krishna is saying in Satyuga Om was sufficient. In Treta and Dwapar, in Treta, Yajurveda was sufficient. In Dwapar, then four Vedas, Puranas was required and Upanishads were required. In Kali Yuga, Itihasas were required. And Kali Yuga is further proceeding. This system of writing and expanding philosophy is not going to stop. The contemporary devotees will keep writing and those writings will be meant to actually bring people to that original fold of devotional service, but just to make it more accessible and practical. So, in this way, Krishna is personally demonstrating through Vyasadeva. So, in this particular purport, the purport mentions about Krishna himself is also saying that in Satyuga he was in the form of the bull of religion, Dharma Vrishabh. You know, he's a bull of religion. So, I'll delve a little bit on this particular pastime, picking up from this verse which is mentioned in the purport. Which goes back to the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, of how did Parikshit Maharaj received and reprimanded this age of Kali, and what does this bull of religion actually represents for all of us. So after Yudhishthir Maharaj left, actually after Krishna left this planet, Yudhishthir Maharaj and the Pandavas, they felt no reason to continue. Imagine getting a kingdom after such a long exile and such turmoil, such massacre, such loss, and you get it, and they rule for around 36 years, and then as soon as Krishna disappears, Yudhishthir Maharaj, even without thinking second time, he says, now it's time for us to move, there is no more reason for us to live. But he was being responsible even in that, so he made Parishat Maharaj as the king of Hastinapur, and he made Vajranam as the king of Mathura, and he left for the northern direction. So these two young kings were ruling. And Parikshit Maharaj visits Vajranab once in Mathura. Vajranab is pretty younger. It's like a father and a son relationship between Parikshit Maharaj and Vajranab. Vajranab is a great grandson of Krishna. And Parikshit Maharaj asks Vajranab that why are you so morose? And Vajranab is saying that I am morose because this town of Mathura is empty. There is nobody living here. Nobody wants to live here because Krishna has disappeared. There is no one to live here. So please help me. So at that time, Parikshit Maharaj calls Shandilya Rishi and they consult him. And he asked Shandilya Rishi, what do you think we should do to remove the moroseness of Vajranam? And he said,
You establish towns and holy places at all those places where Krishna performed his pastimes. Re-erect Vrindavan, re-erect the land of Mathura. And saying that, Chandil Rishi leaves, and Vajranabhan Parishat Maharaj, after consulting the whoever was available, and by their own, you know, devotional contemplation, they could actually understand that where different pastimes happened, and Vajranabh began to erect different places of commemoration at all those places. Parishat Maharaj, you know, asked a large number of Brahmanas to come from Hastinapur and start staying in Mathura, and there were, you know, lot of festivals, and the town is again started becoming, you know, vibrant with devotional enthusiasm and energy. Later one day, because Mathura had some of the queens of Krishna, they were actually, you know, residing in Mathura, who were in between, they were you know, abducted by some infidel cowherd boys when Arjuna was taking them, but then they manifested themselves in Mathura. So Vajranabh is taking care of all the grandmothers, great grandmothers actually, and all these queens are feeling great pangs of separation from Krishna. So one day they see Kalindi. Kalindi is one of the chief 8 queens of Krishna. And she's in a very happy mood. So all the queens ask Kalindi, how are you so happy in separation from Krishna? And how do we, you know, kind of let go of this feelings of separation? How do we deal with them? Not let go, but deal with them. So Kalindi tells them that in past, when gopis were experiencing pangs of separation from Krishna, Krishna sent Uddhav. So I think you should go and, you know, take shelter of Uddhavji, and by his instructions, you will be able to also experience Krishna's presence. Now, where to find Uddhav? Uddhavji had gone to Badrika Ashram, but in one of his forms, he also stays in the area of Kusum Sarovar, Gulmulata, as a creeper of devotion, as just to experience the dust of Vrindavan. And they say, because Uddhavji is an incarnation of Krishna's festivals, you go there, Kusum Sarovar, and perform a Sankirtan Yajna, a Sankirtan festival. So Vajranabh went there with all the queens, and they started performing Sankirtan. Several days passed, and being pleased with their devotional enthusiasm, Uddhavji suddenly appeared. And Uddhavji at that time appeared, and then he told the queens that, don't worry, I'll speak about Krishna's pastimes now to elevate your feelings of separation, and you will be able to experience Krishna. So this is the first narration of the Bhagavatam. So when this Bhagavat description was about to start, Parikshit Maharaj also becomes excited that he is going to listen to Krishna's pastime. But Uddhavji then calls Parikshit and he says that I am going to recite Bhagavatam here to all these queens, and Kali's already have begun its nefarious activities. So you go out and make sure Kali does not disturb this Bhagavat recitation. You protect this area from the influence of Kali. Check and subdue Kali. So Parikshit Maharaj was excited at the prospect, being a Kshatriya, was excited at the prospect that he will get to check Kali, but he was also a little dismayed because he did not get an opportunity to hear about Krishna, the first recitation of the Bhagavatam. So he expresses his heart to Uddhavji. Expressing your feelings is acceptable in the Vaishnava circle, but then later on we do whatever it pleases Vaishnavas. So he told Uddhavji that I also want to hear Bhagavatam. And Uddhavji consoled him, said, don't worry. Through you, this Bhagavatam will get illuminated for the whole world through Shukdev Goswami later on. Right now, you just go and subdue Kali, and the time will come when you will become a recipient of this particular divine message. So in this way, Parishat Maharaj leaves while Uddhavji is reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam for the queens of Dwarka. And because he is reciting the Bhagavatam, some of the commentators say, because of that influence, because of the potency of reciting Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj could actually catch Kali. Because it's not so easy to see Kali personified. But because of that auspiciousness which was created, he was able to, you know, find out the root cause. And he goes out to a lot of places, and finally, one of the acharyas says that when he was coming back to Mathura, he finds this situation where a cow is crying, a bull is wobbling on one single leg, and a man dressed as a king was punishing the bull and the cow and harassing the cow. So he gets this vision right outside. It's like a vision that he's getting of like the essence of Kali's activities being shown to Parikshit Maharaj. So Parikshit Maharaj, seeing Kali dressed as a king, hurting cows and bulls, he becomes, you know, severely indignant. These are the lineage of people. When Arjun was called upon to protect the cows of a Brahmin, he was willing to sacrifice, he was willing to take the risk of breaking the vow of not entering the room when the other brother was there with Draupadi. He kind of took that upon himself and was willing to go for a year long, you know, exile in the forest, but protection of cows was so important for them. So this is that lineage. So when Parikshit Maharaj is seeing something like that happening, you can't imagine the emotional experience he was going through. So Parikshit Maharaj immediately, he checks Kali, and Kali Yuga is dressed as a king who was supposed to protect but was doing harm. So in Kali Yuga, hypocrisy prevails. Hypocrisy is a very, is present practically everywhere in terms of wherever Kali is ruling. Parikshit Maharaj immediately checks Kali Yuga. And he says, Kastvam macharane loke bala dhamsya balan bali naradevo asi veshena natvat karmana advijaha. That you are strong and yet you dare kill, and you are dressed as a king but you are actually causing harm. This kind of hypocritical behavior will not be acceptable under my rule. So the way we deal with hypocrisy, even with our own hearts, or when we see, is to confront it. If you let it grow, it will consume us. So it has to be addressed and not suppressed. But it has to be addressed and, you know, nip it in the bud, as they say. Because this is that beginning of Kali's progression. And when does hypocrisy prevail? Parikshit Maharaj says, Yastvam krishne gate duram saha gandiva dhanvana shochyu asya shochayan rahasi praharan vadham rahasi. And he says that because Lord Krishna and Arjun, the carrier of the Gandiva bow, is not present now, you dare perform this hypocritical behavior. So hypocritical behavior comes up in the absence of genuine devotees practicing genuine Krishna consciousness. Hypocrisy surfaces when there is lack of absorption in Krishna. So, and the only way we can deal with hypocrisy is situate ourselves in the association of genuine devotees practicing genuine Krishna consciousness. That's where we get the strength to see and confront hypocrisy in our hearts or society in general where we live. So Parikshit Maharaj is about to kill Kali. I'm not going to the details of the conversation that is happening between the bull and the cow, and Parikshit Maharaj is asking the bull, who's responsible for your suffering? But Parikshit Maharaj figures out that it is Kali. So he's about to kill Kali. And Kali surrenders out of fear. So when surrender is based on fear instead of love, then that surrender carries the seed of revenge and rebellion later on. When we force people to surrender, showing them some fear, or out of fear people surrender, eventually such people might rebel or come against you to harm you, because that's not what they wanted to do. So surrender has to always be voluntarily in order to, you know, continue in a positive manner. Parikshit Maharaj gives him 5 places to stay. Abhyarthitas tada tasmai sthanani kalaye dadau dyutam panam striya suna yatra dharmas chaturvidha. So he gave him these 4 places of intoxication, gambling, meat eating and illicit sex. He said, you stay there. Kali says, but in your rule, I'll not find any of these 4 places. So give me some other place as well. So he said, wherever there is holding for gold, you are the king. So he made these 5 places for a king, for Kali to stay here. And we see Kali, in spite of being given shelter by Parikshit Maharaj, struck back at him. How? By influencing this Brahmana boy, Sringi, to curse Parikshit Maharaj disproportionately. His offense was not as big as the punishment that was rewarded to him. So Kali Yuga is based on ingratitude. Kali was not grateful to Parikshit Maharaj for getting shelter in his kingdom, despite his disqualification, despite what he was doing, still he was given shelter, he was not grateful for it. So Kali is based on ingratitude. And who becomes an instrument of Kali? Someone who is proud and ungrateful. And we see that in Sringi. Kali could actually influence Sringi because of his pride and because of his lack of gratitude. He became an instrument of Kali Yuga. So Sringi was proud of his powers because of performing austerities. And he was able to perform these austerities and sacrifice and live by Dharma because Parikshit Maharaj was ruling so well. Therefore, Dharma could prevail. But he was not grateful for the services Parikshit Maharaj has rendered to the Brahminical community. He just became puffed up for the powers that he had received without being grateful for the people because of whom he had received those powers. And when he was ungrateful and puffed up, he used those same powers for a wrong reason against a wrong person, and that led to a wrong dawning for everybody for all time to come. Kali began to spread. So that's what happens when we get confounded by pride and arrogance very subtly. So how Kali infiltrates us is, it doesn't have to do something externally extraordinary. All Kali has to do is make us feel proud and ungrateful. If we can just be proud and ungrateful, we are already victimized by Kali Yuga. So that story goes of a Brahmin. He is sleeping. He is very much attached to performing his... He is very pakka in performing his Sandhya Vandanams and the Gayatri and the rules and regulations. Very, very precise. Not that it should not be done. It should be done. But he's a little proud of his... He's finding great sense of achievement in doing that. And one day he's sleeping and his Sandhya Vandanam time is passing away. So one gentleman comes up to him and he wakes him up. He said, "My dear Brahmin, please get up. It's time for your Sandhya Vandanam." He gets up, he washes his face, he washes his hands and legs, chants Gayatri, and then he turns to this person and says, "Thank you so much. If you would not have been there, I would have, you know, missed my vows of performing Gayatri. Thank you so much. Please tell me, who are you?" And this man looked at the Brahman and said, "I am Kali personified." So Brahman got a doubt. He said, "You're Kali personified. You're supposed to oppose Dharma. You're supposed to oppose religious activities. Why did you wake me up and ask me to perform religious activities? Why did you remind me of performing religious activities?" And probably Kali was in good mood that day, so he kind of revealed. And he said, "If I would have allowed you to sleep and you would have missed your Gayatri, after waking up you would have felt remorse. And in that remorse you would have become humble. And if you would have become humble, you have made tremendous spiritual advancement. But by waking you up, I have maintained your pride. And by keeping your pride up, I would not let you move towards the spiritual destination." So Kali enters different people's lives in different ways. For some, it may say, don't take up spiritual activities. For some who are very good at spiritual activities, he may make them proud and not let them reap the benefits of their activities. It's like you get the ATM card, but somebody steals your password. Your billions of dollars or billions of rupees in your bank account, but you can't withdraw a penny because the password is gone. So all Kali has to do is keep us proud and make us arrogant. And ingratitude is the handle and pride is the blade of the axe by which you cut down all sense of sattva in your life and let Kali come up with its plans. And once we are ungrateful, pride is just the flip side of the coin. Why? Because when we don't recognize the role of others in our life, we start taking credit for whatever is happening in our lives. Right? And that leads to pride. That leads to further arrogance. So Kali would never allow anyone to become humble. Because if they become humble, then the gates of knowledge swing open. That's why Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, when he's talking about culture of knowledge, what is the first item he says? amanitvam, humility. So he's talking of the qualities that one needs to have in order to access the right kind of knowledge. Humility. And Kali will make all those enterprises flourish and prosper, which increases the sense of false pride of people. Because that's how he just have to do that to keep them away from the devotional fold. And that can happen even to practicing devotees, that they become proud and they start feeling themselves better than others just because we are doing something devotionally. We actually lose a sense of gratitude for what we have received and become puffed up and arrogant. So Kali doesn't even have to make us stop our spiritual activities. It just had to kind of affect our internal environment. Externally, it may still allow us to continue our spiritual activities, but the internal environment is what is going to corrupt. And once internally we are withdrawn from Vaishnavas, Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, because in Kali Yuga, you can disobey Guru, you can disrespect Sadhus, and you don't read Shastra. That's how Kali actually cuts our umbilical cord, which kind of nourishes. And when these three things happen internally, you are emotionally withdrawn from devotees, from the culture of Vaishnavism, from the culture of, you know, bhakti. And then when you withdraw from there, you become intimate with your mind. And when the intimacy with the mind develops, it pushes you into nefarious activities. And that's happened because of the influence of this Kali. So it's very critical and important that one practices the quality of humility. And somebody was asking me that, how do we practice humility? I said, we can at least be respectful. Humility is like a jewel which is bestowed by the Supreme Lord upon seeing the good qualities in a devotee. That is something, you know, two big sannyasis, two very exalted devotees and sannyasis, they were talking, and I was overhearing that conversation, fortunate enough. So, and they said that if somebody is, no one can understand if someone is humble, he himself. He said if somebody is humble himself, he would never think he is humble. And if somebody claims he is humble, he is definitely not humble. And going through one said that if when you say I am trying to be humble, that means you don't have it. You are trying to practice it. So humility is very far off. At least we can be honest and respectful. That platform of vyavahar is accessible to us as sadhakas. And when we stand on this platform and perform our sadhana bhakti, gradually humility is a quality which has to be rubbed over you. When we closely associate with a Bhagavat who carries that quality. Because humility is very difficult to understand as well. It's not just, you know, meekness. It's not just sweet speech. It's not just, you know, always smiling. Humility is a very, very deep quality. So only somebody who has it can give you. When it rubs against you. When you see humility being manifested by a exalted personality, you get pulled towards that personality. And that's where the quality of humility becomes very attractive. Because in our experience of material life, humility is probably seen as weakness. Only a spiritual personality can actually show by his example that humility is the greatest strength. Because it gives you access to Krishna. Not just access to Krishna. Krishna wants to connect with a person who is humble. So, like somebody was asking that, when is it possible to perfectly control our senses? Is it by developing a lot of jnana that we can perfectly control our senses? Or if we get perfect the system of yoga asanas, can we perfectly control our senses? If we become perfect in chanting mantras, or if we surround our room with all kind of quotes, when sense agitation comes, we look at them and we remind ourselves and not fall for it. And we were discussing and I said that, see, perfect sense control is possible only when you are humbler than a blade of grass. If you are anywhere above this, it's just a matter of what tempts you. But sense gratification can still happen. It can still make us tip over. And the example, several examples, but of people falling for it. But a most stable example of someone not agitated by any amount of temptation, Vishal Haridas Thakur. And Mahaprabhu sent him to such difficult tests just to show that this is the quality which can actually keep one immune to the plan of Kali's temptations and keep us steady on this path. Arrogance makes us vulnerable to sense gratification. Humility provides us immunity against sense indulgence. And then when that immunity is there, we can actually in that healthy state focus on Krishna, focus on the devotional path. So then this bull of religion which Parikshit Maharaj is trying to save, he's saying, Tapa shaucham daya satyam iti pada krite kritah adharmamshaistaryo bhagna smaya sangamadaistava. He says, in the age of Satya, your four legs were established with the four principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy and truthfulness. But it appears that three of your legs are broken due to rampant irreligion in the form of pride, lust for women and intoxication. So interestingly, I will not go into the details of what they represent because most of you know what they are. But I'll attempt to show how those qualities when practiced by people upheld or established dharma. And sometimes those very qualities became instrumental in destroying dharma or help adharmic people flourish. So we see truthfulness, satyam. So what is truthfulness? Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Devotion, he says truthfulness means a person whose word of honor is never broken. That famous Ramcharitmanas, Ragukul Rita Sada Chaliyai, Prana Jaya Parvachana Na Jaya. That truthfulness is the leg of religion and the word of honor is never broken. And how is truthfulness cultivated? It begins by recognizing that Krishna is the embodiment of supreme truth and by dedicating our lives to following his instructions. That is the ultimate benchmark of truthfulness. Shivra Maharaj says, one should always, in devotional circles, we should also avoid dishonest communication. Because truthfulness is the last leg of dharma which is wobbling. If we break this also consciously, then there is no possibility of the other three. So dishonest communication should be avoided. And he gives a very simple example. He says sometimes devotees, they want to talk to you and they say, Prabhuji, I just want to talk to you for 5 minutes. And they land up talking for 45 minutes. And Maharaj says, this may appear very trivial, but it could be consequential in terms of the way Kali infiltrates you. So he said, be very honest in your communication. If you need half an hour, you say that Prabhu, I need to spend half an hour with you. At least on the common dealings, truthfulness should be practiced, Maharaj is mentioning in one of his books. And in terms of Varnashram, truthfulness also means being honest about who we are and what our abilities are. Like once His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj in his class mentioned, humility is also to understand our limitations. That is also humility. So here, Maharaj is writing that truthfulness also means being honest about who we are and what our abilities are. Right? Because what happens when you start living someone else's life, we fall into the category of prayasa. Nectar of Instruction says, we start over-endeavoring for that one thing that is very, very attractive. Because we are stepping out of that area of who we are actually. What are natural qualities. As soon as you cross Lakshman Rekha, there is trouble. So as soon as we cross the realm of our natural capabilities and everything, there is a strain, there is struggle. And while pursuing that prayas, then sometimes what happens is we lose focus on our spiritual life. And we kind of start compromising on that and trying to, make ourselves materially very, very, successful or whatever it is. But we then start losing focus on our spiritual activities. So the example of truthfulness comes in, all of us have heard that story of that boy Satyakam who is asked by this, I think, Jaimini Rishi was there. He asked Jabali Rishi, yeah. So Jabali Rishi, he approaches Jabali Rishi, can you teach me Vedas and Shastras? Jabali Rishi says, I instruct only Brahmanas. Find out who you are, what's your varna. He goes back to his mother. Mother says, I was associating with many men, so I don't know really. So this boy comes back to Jabalirishi and he says that this is what the reality is. And the Jabalirishi said, I'll teach you because you're truthful. That's the quality of a Brahmana. Right? So, that is a positive example. And we also see examples of... apparently for the purpose of pastimes. Now, Bhishmadev is a great Mahajan. Today is Bhishmashtami. And he's a great Mahajan. But for the purpose of pastime, we see that how his aspect of sticking to his vow of being loyal to the throne of Hastinapur brought about so much destruction. At least temporarily, Adharma flourished till Krishna intervened. So although he was sticking to truthfulness, it was leading to a different kind of result vis-a-vis the flourishing of Adharma and decline of Dharma. Second is mercy or daya. Mercy means to bring someone relief from distress or to show compassion or to show forgiveness. So we see several examples of people showing daya and establishing dharma. Like Narad Muni has so many examples. He showed mercy to Mrigadhari, he showed mercy to Kayadhu, he showed mercy to Valmiki. And in all of these situations we see how dharmic people flourished or principles of dharma were upheld. The negative aspect of the when the principle of mercy was utilized, but with a negative, you know, kind of impact, was when Duryodhana decided to show mercy to Karna by accepting him as his friend, giving him his kingdom, but his whole intention was to destroy dharma. He used the principle of showing daya, but his whole idea was to actually destroy dharma. Then comes his austerity or tapa. Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Instruction, a human being is meant to be trained according to certain principles to revive his original knowledge, and such a methodical life is called tapasya. So, we see the positive example of somebody performing tapasya and bringing such dharma for all time to come was Bhagirath Maharaj, who did so much. His three generations performed tapasya, Dilip, Amshuman, and finally Bhagirath Maharaj, and brought Ganga. We were recently at Kumbh Mela. You can actually see. His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj was giving his address in the evening at Kumbh Mela Pandan, and he said, this is the meaning of all attractive. Who can attract 40 million people in a day at one place to take a dip? That's all. He said, that is Krishna. Krishna is all attractive. And he was glorifying Mother Ganga and him. And we see perennially flowing, they attract such deep sense of devotion in the hearts of people. The presence of Mother Ganga, the presence of Mother Yamuna, it actually extracts the finest of the emotions. Of course, the journey to reach till the point of Sangam is pretty intense, because His Holiness Lokanath Maharaj was telling in the evening that the whole mood was like aham purvam, aham purvam, aham purvam. Everybody was rushing. Can you imagine 40 million people and all these akhadas and everything? They're all rushing. But the point is, people know or not know, we are being attracted by Krishna's opulence and his mercy flowing in the form of Mother Ganga. And they get purified. So Bhagirath Maharaj did that austerity, and there is all time to come we have the benefit. Hiranyakashipu also performed austerities. In fact, he did so much austerity that Brahmaji said that nobody can perform austerities like you. No devotee can actually perform austerities like you. But what he did with all that austerities? Destroyed dharma. And finally is cleanliness. Prabhupada talks about internal and external cleanliness. And we see the positive is cleanliness aspect of Shaucham is internal cleanliness, the chastity of Mother Draupadi, chastity of so many ladies, but specifically her, which led to the war and established dharma for time to come. If it not have been Draupadi's chastity and Draupadi's, you know, determination. In fact, when they are out of Virat's kingdom, Agyatvas, and they are having a conversation, all the five brothers, Krishna and everybody sitting, and Yudhishthira Maharaj is saying, maybe we should try to evade war by all possible means, because there is so much, you know, genocide that will happen because of the war. And everybody is giving their opinion. Bhima is giving their opinion. Arjuna is giving their opinion. And Krishna is listening. And they are requesting, Krishna, you go as peace messenger and see if war can be evaded. Can we avoid this war? And as Krishna is leaving, Draupadi is standing at the gates of this sabha and she's crying hot tears and is saying, Krishna, you're really going to do that? You forgot all that I had to undergo and now you're going as a peace messenger and will convince them? What will happen to all that I have undergone? Who will reinstate my honor? And Krishna said, don't worry. The day Dushasan touched your hairs and everything else, that day only it was sealed that these people will be killed. But we still want to give chance to these people. But rest assured, Duryodhana is not going to agree. He is totally hell-bent. So don't worry. I promise you. Krishna Mother Draupadi's intense practice of dharma which led to this war and established dharma later on. The negative of cleanliness was Shaucham. These caste Goswamis, they themselves felt that they are so pure by birth or by activities that they even opposed a personality like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur when he is visiting Vrindavan. And in opposing a Vaishnava like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they actually closed all possible gates of their own spiritual improvement. Right? So we see these four legs of religion also can actually destroy religion itself. So what is that quality which a practitioner should have which enables that practitioner to practice these four principles and also establish dharma as a result of practicing these qualities? And that is the qualities of, as we were discussing, gratitude and pridelessness. Because as soon as we become ungrateful and full of pride, Kali enters us. We become instruments of Kali, and even through these four legs of religion, it can destroy the religion itself. So therefore, while we are practicing devotional service, while we are practicing culture of bhakti, it's imperative that we cultivate this culture of gratitude and pridelessness through Vaishnav Seva, through study of scriptures, through the process of Sankirtan, and become genuine devotees for propagating a genuine culture of bhakti. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sorry, we went a little over time, so please, I apologize for that.